Hola! Welcome to Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita, the only Spanglish anti-diet podcast that teaches you from a sociological lens, feminism, and intuitive eating coaching to dismantle diet culture. I'm your host, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez, and I am passionate about dismantling diet culture and helping you heal your relationship with food and your body. I'm a mother, daughter, comadre, amiga, community member, professor, health coach, and published author. On this show, I share my personal experience with diet culture, tips and strategies, and educational content to help you understand diet culture and systems of oppression so that you can have the tools to challenge diet culture. Current and future generations do not deserve to inherit your diet culture trauma, and I'm here to help you. If you're on a mission to heal your body and food traumas and embody your authentic self unapologetic, welcome to Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita. Hola, bienvenidos a Dismantling Diet Culture, Fuck Being Calladita. This is your host, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez. Estoy super emocionada. I'm so excited. And I know you hear me say this in every episode. And that is the truth, because it is truly an honor to always share this space with my amazing guests. En serio, se los digo de corazón. And in today's podcast episode, I have a healer. An amiga, an hermana, and we've connected on social media, and I'm just so honored to have her here. So without further ado, let me go ahead and introduce her. Natalie Gutierrez, licensed LMFT, is the author of The Pain We Carry. Es lo primero, okay? She's the author of The Pain We Carry, so go get your book. Natalie is of Puerto Rican descent, soul healer and trauma expert working with survivors of complex trauma in the global majority, reeling from the soul wounds of racial trauma, historical and colonial trauma, intergenerational and attachment trauma, and sexual trauma, carrying cultural and legacy burdens. Natalie's work integrates the intersections of ancestral and generational healing and wisdom, internal family systems, activism, and a liberation focused. Bienvenida.
Muchas gracias, hermana.
Estoy,
thank you for having me.
Gracias. Estoy super emocionada. You published a book, and we'll definitely get into it and all the amazing work that you're doing. But I want to know about, and the audience wants to know, who is this Natalie who wrote this amazing work and doing healing work? Who was she growing up?
Ooh.
I know, right?
She, you know, was a survivor of so many things. Right? Like, she was this little girl who couldn't afford very much. She grew up in the Lower East Side in New York City public housing, Baruch Projects, and which is in the Lower East Side of Manhattan before its gentrification, feels important to say, because the Lower East Side, the LES that I grew up in, is not the one that I see today. Now it's like a lot of hipsters. And you cannot even afford to get an apartment around there at all, right? And so, you know, she was the little observer. She was the one that would look around and just see her people and see the struggle and see, like, her aunties, see their struggles. She would see her tías looking out the windows. Tías, like, not blood tías, but, you know, community tías looking That's out right. the window.
Mm-hmm. La vecina.
And, exacto. And just seeing, though, how communities, particularly communities of color that were also struggling with food and housing insecurity, financial insecurity, right? Restricted financial resources, how that was impacting the communities that she was living in, right? It was really impacting a lot of the people around her, which were mostly Black and Brown folks. And so she was the little one that was observing all of that. And growing up in school, she was the one that was, like, you know, folks would consider the good friend, the good listener, which, surprise, surprise, she would grow up to become a therapist, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. A space holder. She was the one that was the listener when people had their problems, their beef. She was the one that people would come to and would just depend on to li give a listening ear. And that was
Yeah, that's
just
like
always
therapist.
her thing.
You're already practicing
Exacto.
therapy.
Since I was little. So when people are like, how long have you been practicing? It's like officially 16 years, unofficially like my whole life.
That's right.
But always very, very, como yo dije, like just observing. I was always the observer and then always the collector of information. Like the historian without being inducted into that, right? But it was just really trying to understand. I was always very curious and trying to understand the why and trying to understand and make the connections of things. I've just always been very, very curious in that way, but also very intuitive, very empathic. You know, people's tears were also my tears. And I was always very gentle, which over time, I think I want to say I got hardened. Right, because the world hardens you when, especially for sense for people that identify as sensitive, right, or highly sensitive people, that you are hardened when people judge why you're crying for quote no reason, right, or you know why certain things are impacting you when nothing is really happening, or you know that term when you're being reprimanded as a child and they say like, you want me to give you something to cry about, kind of thing.
The chancla thing.
Right. So there was a lot of she was little me was met with a lot of messages to hide, messages to harden. And so I had to do that. I had to harden. But that didn't quite change or shift the one inside that is very, very sensitive. I'm still there. She's still there, right? It's also been very protected and there's been a lot of degrees of separation between, you know, my protectiveness and her.
Muchas gracias por compartirnos esto. And I'm like nodding, like you're talking about my life. It's like I can relate to you 100%. It's like, hermana, what's your sign? It's
Yeah,
like, what?
I am a Libra.
Oh,
I am a
God. Oh, I
Libra.
have Libra. So maybe that's why we're like,
And you said
honestly,
you're
like,
Leo?
yes, I'm Leo.
That's my rising.
Oh,
That's
my God.
my,
And Libra is my rising sign. Oh, God.
yeah.
So see how we're connected in this like beautiful universe and in a spiritual way. Like, you know, that's so deep. Thank you so much for sharing. I really loved how you used the language around of being a this like holding space, right? You were that space holder. I really love that, which can become a burden, verdad, and responsibility, especially for us, for women. And being an observant too, like growing up, did you have like the language? Because I didn't, I completely relate to you 100%, but it wasn't when I was an undergrad that I took sociology. That's why I love sociology, that I was able to have the language to understand my childhood and everything. Because I was that observant, I was that space holder. I was a girl in high school que le hablaba a todo mundo, que la gente hablaba conmigo, la gente me tenía confianza. And guess what? It's the same thing today, right?
Right. I definitely did not have the language, I want to say, until maybe high school, where I took like one psych class. And I can't even remember. I think before taking that psych class, I wanted to be a journalist. That was like, because I also loved writing and again, curious and making connections and learning about the world. And so I wanted to be a journalist. And then I took a psych class and then I was like, oh, wait, maybe this is more aligned with me. And so that from there, from that point, it was seeking to be a space holder, a therapist, right? At the time it was a psychologist. But it was that is essentially what put me in the direction of psychology and of doing therapy. But I didn't have the language around it, but I knew that that was like what I was really good at.
destined,
And part of
perhaps,
it,
to do the
and
calling.
part of it, like you mentioned, it can be burdensome, right? Like it can be burden. There were parts of it that weren't when it came from a place of just genuinely listening and genuinely wanting to understand and care for someone. And then there were parts of it that were burdening in a sense of like when you have to do that very thing because you are triangulated in your family, right? And you are forced into that role, right? It is no longer a choice. It is now something that you have to do in, you know, in the spirit of survival, of, you know, being in an environment, growing in an environment that was violent, where you, and if not violent, tumultuous, turbulent, where you are the triangulated space holder between your parents, right? That for me is where it became so burdensome, because that wasn't my role. Like that wasn't from a choice. Rather than when it was with my friends, it was like, I loved to do it.
Yeah, see. And for the folks who are listening and can begin that like reflective journey of thinking about their childhood and, you know, their experiences and the different traumas that they have, how did you begin that healing journey? And in that process, if you can share tips and strategies for a community that don't have access to this, right? Or college students, ¿cómo lo hiciste tú? ¿Y qué aprendiste?
Yeah, I think I want to say I tried to start my healing journey in college. College for me was where the wheel started coming off of the car. Like,
that was too quick.
College for me was where it was like, oh, that was the invitation from the universe to really lean into my shadows and my own traumas. That is really, really where the wheel started coming off, because that was where I started struggling. I was, you know, getting into friendships and romantic relationships that just didn't serve me and were, you know, emotionally abusive, and at times verbally abusive, right? And so there were these situations that were happening, and then I remember just really feeling so depressed and anxious as well, but just so hopeless and so depressed and so angry and so confused and so lost.
I love how you're saying all those emotions, the messiness, and sometimes we can't make sense of it or even articulate it. So we just want to validate that it's okay to have all these emotions. You don't know what the fuck is going on or how to name them.
Right. And then I'm also like, you know, in college for the first time, and I'm like, you know, alone for the first time, and I'm like an adult, but I'm still not really. And sometimes I'm feeling like a frozen teenager. And so I'm in this weird ass space. And life is calling me to heal the things that are unhealed within me. And it was really a shit show, a super shit show, if I am being really honest. And
thank you.
I remember going into the university, the therapy,
the wellness center. Have different names.
Right, exactly. And I just remember like going maybe for sure once, maybe twice, and I was like, this ain't it. Like I was so like, I just really was giving up. I was giving up. Like I was like, nothing's gonna be helpful. Like I hate my parents. You know, it just was like so not. I was looking for, you know, love in all the wrong places. I was looking for approval and other, so, and I was cutting class. I remember it was days I just didn't. I started failing classes. Like it was bad. It was not good. And I'm trying to think of when it began to, I think it began to turn around, honestly, probably my senior year of college, when I realized that I was not going to get into a doctoral program with the grades that I had received from really just struggling, right? From really struggling. And so that's when I started to turn around. But it also felt very difficult because there was no one really to talk to, because there were just The only people that I had access to were white clinicians, and I didn't feel comfortable going to white clinicians. And so I didn't know any BIPOC therapist. There was none in sight. So for me, there was no point to do that. So I relied on my friends, on my circle to kind of be that. That was in college. And then 2 years after college, because I waited before going to grad school, I did 2 years of, you know, working. And I was still struggling during that time too. And it wasn't until a terrible breakup that I had in 2004 or something that then really just led me to like this moment of the fork in the road where it says like you have a decision right now that you have to make. And so I was like, I need to really like reset right now and start this inner journey. This has to be for me. I can't do this for anyone else. Like, I really have to reclaim myself. Otherwise, I'm really going to just die. I'm going to die. And so that's when I decided to apply to grad school. And I didn't know that whether or not I wanted to do a 5-year doctoral program. So I applied for a master's program, and that's how I got my marriage and family therapy master's degree. And I ended up saying, I want to go somewhere I don't know anyone. I want to go somewhere where it's hot and I don't know anyone. And so I ended up going to Hawaii, and I did my master's in Hawaii, which really changed my life.
Wow.
That moment is what changed my life. And that is what really called me to heal. And that is where I learned about the land. And that is where I learned about community. And I went from like this New Yorker. I was so fucking stuck up and stank as fuck going to Hawaii. And I went over in Hawaii. And when I first got there, I remember I was like rushing. I was like, people know New York City. We speak fast, we walk fast, and we have just no patience for anyone. And that was me going to Hawaii, which is like one of the most slower paced places and so loving with the aloha spirit. And you're looking into each other's eyes saying good morning.
Oh.
While in New York,
no, hombre, hazte pa un lado, move. They step on you, shoulder you.
We're not even sorry. Looking at you. Exactly. Yeah. So that really invited me to slow down. It taught me so much. And that was where I began to see a therapist and really begin to just do a lot of call-ins with my mom and begin to build more of a, I want to say, to heal our relationship. That really invited me to heal my relationship with myself and the land. And yeah, from there was that was what I needed. That was really, truly what I needed, hermana.
Wow, this is beautiful. Gracias por ser tan honesta, ¿no? Y compartir, porque, you know, there's other folks who are listening who were like, how did you do it? You know, they always see like that success and all this, but it's like you fucking struggled, you know, and yeah. That you were willing. And I think if we can talk about it more as a therapist, you as a therapist, you were willing to address those shadows, like you said, the monster, this shit is fucking hard. It's scary as fuck, and it's painful. I mean, for those who have the courage, because it's courage, amiga, ¿no crees? Es tener el coraje y la valentía to dive in.
Yeah.
Fuck, because, you know, and se me enchila la piel porque es difícil. So, and you're going through grad school while you're doing your healing, right? So how do you invite folks into this journey knowing that it's so fucking hard?
You know, I think part of it was when it comes to inviting folks into this journey is there has to be a commitment where you say, you know, bad shit has happened, right? Bad shit has happened. The world has taught me that it can't be trusted. And there are a trillion one, and I've shared this before in, you know, in some of my content and my posts, like there's really a trillion and one reasons why I should really just give up on people. because people are so painful, so hurtful.
That's so true. It's like, can I have a moment of humanity?
And also, there is so much love in people too, right? Maybe not in everybody. Maybe I'm not able to connect with the love in people that are really layered with so much hate. But somewhere in them, there's love, and they've just been so freaking conditioned to hate that it's just, it's become who they present themselves to the world. And I may not be able to do anything about that, but there are other people that there is love there, that there is love somewhere in them. And if we can commit ourselves to trying to see the good in people, the way that we begin to do that is by committing ourselves to seeing the goodness in ourselves.
Mic drop right there, mic drop.
Yeah, it's
That's
just
true.
It's important.
Yeah. Sí, es. Claro, hermana, ¿cómo puedes mirar el amor, la humanidad de otras personas si tú no lo miras en ti misma, si no te amas, si no te aceptas, si no get rid of that shame and all that stuff, right? Like, that's why the healing begins with oneself, so that we can collectively continue to heal, right? We're interconnected.
Right, 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 right. And so if I am struggling with trying to befriend someone else's like protective energy, there's a struggle within my own self also to befriend parts of me that maybe I want to exile away. And that is my work, right? And that is my work. And it doesn't mean we give a green light to people doing bad things, right? That's not it. But do we throw people away? Do we throw people away? And I'm even, you know, I'm on this journey of trying to see, you know, I consider myself an abolitionist, but I'm not fully there yet. I feel like I have so much to learn around that, because my own internal conditioning also says anytime someone does a mistake, it's like, you should be punished, right? They should be punished. Throw them in the jail. But then it's like, but then it's like, well, but is that helpful? Like, we are so wounded in so many ways that how do we really, 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 truly approach this from a more medicinal place?
I love that. And this is a great way to pivot into that. And I think that one of the ways that you offered your healing and your medicine is this book, The Pain We Carry. Tell us about this book. ¿De qué se trata?
Ooh. So the Pain We Carry is an invitation for us to see that the pain that we carry, which really is grief, a lot of grief, a lot of traumatic grief, that much of what we carry stems from things that have happened to us and things that have happened to our people. And that a lot of the time we blame ourselves for our anxiety, our depression, you know, our suicidal ideations, right? Our suicidal thoughts, when a lot of this really is connected to the wounding that still lives within us, that comes from, you know, our historical trauma, the pain from our lineages, and also, you know, that is also passed down throughout the generations, right? So there's the generational trauma piece, as well as the historical trauma, but there's also the societal piece. There's also the larger cultural piece, right? Our families, for example, have these burdens, have these beliefs about themselves and about us and how we should navigate the world, and all of these survival strategies and painful patterns and beliefs. All of that wasn't part of their original blueprint. That wasn't part of like who they really are at the core. That was that had to change. That had to happen. And that is residue from the ancestral trauma, right? From the historical trauma, from the residue or the remnants of the ancestral pain that still lives as blood memory, that still lives, exists and communicates to us as cell memory. But also, they are navigating environments that are racist and oppressive. And what happens then, right? Like the mother, like the parent, like the caregiver that cannot, that emotionally abandons their child, that physically abandons their child because they're working 3-4 jobs to bring food, because we live in a very capitalist society. And so this parent doesn't necessarily want to miss out on their kids' parent-teacher conferences or shows or whatever, but they are. And kids are left by themselves because they have to work, or because they're afraid of parenting their child because they weren't taught intimacy, right? There's just so much of this is, again, happens through historical trauma and also happens through these societal systems that we are conditioned in. And I think a lot of the time when we speak about whether it's generational trauma or the understanding of complex trauma, people really omit these kind of things. And it is important that we understand that all of this is interconnected, that historical trauma is interconnected, that societal systemic trauma is interconnected, and generational trauma is interconnected. And we individually are holding all of this, right? And then we fight with one another, and then we hate ourselves, and then we hate other people, because this is how we are impacted. And that is the reason why I wrote The Pain We Carry, so we can really begin to see with a microscope, looking within to see what is really brewing within us. That's that we are blaming ourselves for, again, right? That we are labeling ourselves with depression and anxiety and da-da-da-da-da-da, but really stems from so much that is larger than us.
Ay, hermana. Casi quería llorar ahorita con todo lo que estás platicando, porque pues this is our lives, you know. You were talking to our communities. This book, I see your book when I read it as a book dedicated to me, dedicated to BIPOC folks to understand. And it was actually your book that I learned, like, you know, I learned, wait, there's regular PTSD, and then there's complex. Like, what the fuck? This is hot. Con razón estoy tan. I'm in a better place, you know. But I was like, no wonder this shit has been hard.
Yeah.
So, tell us what is the difference between PTSD and then complex PTSD?
Yeah, and so post-traumatic stress disorder PTSD is really something that tends to be more connected with single incident trauma. Right. So if you were in a car accident, or if, let's say, you were jumped or something like that, right? That is more aligned with post-traumatic stress. It's an incident that causes, you know, the nervous system to go into a fight, flight, or freeze response, and then you're kind of frozen in there. And then you experience some sort of whether it's somatic, I want to say somatization, but more of, you know, somatic trauma responses. So that can look like, I mean, that can look like so many things, but more like sensory triggers. That can look like if something smells like something that's connected to a trauma, or so it's a sound that is connected to the trauma. So it has a lot of sensory trigger connections. When we, and you know, very aligned with single incident trauma. But when we are thinking about something that is an experience that has us either going into a fight or flight or freeze response or a fawn response, that is not just one time, but something that is ongoing, right? That has also elicited a toxic stress response, which I want to say toxic stress, that term was coined by Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris when talking about childhood trauma and, you know, what positive stress is and what, ay, se me olvidó la palabra. I'm trying to think. Positive stress, Algo más that I just completely forgot at the moment. And then toxic stress, right? in the middle, the what the that I've since forgotten, that's the kind of stress that happens, right? Like let's say if we experience sexual abuse and but someone like a caregiver was able to support us through it, and it doesn't necessarily stay frozen within us, right? It doesn't, it's something, it's a event that happened that was painful, but it but we're not stuck in that trauma. Tolerable stress. Tolerable stress. That's what it's
Okay.
called.
Oh, taller. Okay.
Tolerable stress. And then, but then there's toxic stress. And toxic stress is really that stress that is intolerable. It is that stress that continues to happen in a very, you know, very persistent and ongoing, to where if you were to ask someone, hey, name one time where, like, for example, you didn't feel loved, and this person's like, I haven't felt loved my whole entire life. There are so many examples of the ways that, you know, my parents weren't there for me, my caregivers weren't there, da 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 da. Right? That's like, there's some attachment wounding there, there's some attachment trauma there. There's some, you know, developmental trauma, and that eventually will lead to complex trauma. And that has been the conversation for so long, right? So complex trauma is more ongoing. It's an ongoing exposure to toxic stress that
I'm
then
gonna add, like systematically, like
absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's exactly it. I think a lot of the conversations we have around complex trauma, complex PTSD, is really just about attachment wounds, right? It's about that developmental trauma. It's about what our caregivers did or didn't do. But again, it doesn't start there. It doesn't start there. And it's important that we see complex trauma or complex PTSD as a more holistic, from a more holistic way, from a more holistic lens, by seeing, well, you know, what are microaggressions and how does that impact the nervous system? How does racial trauma impact the nervous system? How does poverty trauma impact the nervous system? How does migration trauma impact the nervous system, right? How does incarceration impact the nervous
Oh
system,
gosh.
right? How does all of these systemically
Layers and
impact the
layers.
Exacto. And so, you know, when we think about that, it is important to also to not forget that. To not just understand complex PTSD, complex trauma as what our caregivers did or didn't do, but really when we think about it as relational trauma, we have relationships within our communities. And when we're experiencing interpersonal racism or oppression, that happens within our communities, that happens within our systems, where we are relating every single day because we are existing within those places, right? And so it is important for us to see complex trauma from a more genuine, holistic lens.
Yeah, I love this. It's so sociological too, you know. I mean, being a sociologist, like, of course all this makes sense, you know. I get you. And for folks who are listening, it's like, oh, okay, now I understand. Like, hopefully this episode is allowing folks who are listening to go there if they want to go there whenever they're ready, or if they want to continue to explore complex PTSD. And of course, encourage folks to buy your book so that they can read it, because it is healing. And you do offer strategies, techniques, journal prompts, me parece, like, so there's a lot there. So I encourage folks to please go buy the book, support a woman of color, and learn more about yourself by reading this book. So that's one tangible thing that folks can do. And as we wrap up, what else do you suggest? What nuggets of advice as a therapist can you offer folks with complex PTSD? Todo lo que hemos platicado.
Yeah, I really want to say, number one is go at your own pace, right? But it is important that you commit yourself to your healing journey, that you believe at the root of you that you are deserving of your healing. Because a lot of the times we get in our way because we don't feel like we deserve our healing. So how do you really root yourself in that truth that you are deserving of this healing? And then start small. But a lot of the work that we need to do, both individually and collectively, is begin to trust each other one another again, that we begin to reclaim our relationships again, our community again, that we seek it, that we build it, that part of also building that community, that building that community and trusting that community is also doing the internal work so that you can begin to trust yourself again. When we are in systems, when we exist and grow up in systems that are racist and oppressive, we are taught to not trust ourselves. We are taught to dismiss ourselves. We are conditioned to shrink, to be silent. We are conditioned to self-loathe. And we are going to need, again, both individually and as a collective, to undo all of those things piece by piece, right? I think of like the ball of yarn that has, you know, all of this together. And we need to really piece by piece delayer all of this so that we can get clarity within ourselves about who we are beneath and beyond the burdens that we have internalized, that we get clarity within ourselves about who we are beneath and beyond the internalized messages that we have received, both generationally and also systemically, that we really commit to becoming legacy shifters, that we are shifting legacies, cultural legacy burdens, and personal burdens. That is the road to liberation, and that is the road to reclaiming yourself and reclaiming your people and reclaiming your land and your relationship to land once again.
Oh, hermosísimo. Where can folks find this amazing woman? Natalie, where can they find you? Porque I'm sure folks are like, who is she? I want to work with her. What are her offerings?
Well, my folks can find me on my website, which is www.natalieygutierrez.com. And an IG is where I usually relax and chill in, which is at Natalie Gutierrez LMFT. I do have a TikTok, but it's like, you can follow me there if you want to be bored, because all my videos there, I make them to put it on, mm-hmm. on the gram. And then of course LinkedIn, but definitely my website has all the listings of the groups that I offer, individual work, consultation, retreat, all that stuff. So folks can find my website.
Wonderful. And I'll make sure to, of course, include all this in the show notes. Natalie, muchas gracias por tu tiempo, por el trabajo que haces. Te quiero mucho y te aprecio mucho. Gracias. Thank you for existing. Thank you for bringing healing to our communities.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you too. And thank you for having me and the work that you do, doctora, the work that you do. It is so powerful and needed and important. And just, I want you to know that I'm here to amplify your work and support you. I love you. I see you.
Hi. First episode that I'm going to end crying. I always cried at the beginning or in the middle, but nunca.
You're about to make me cry. I'm about to cry.
Never at the end. Gracias. Thank you for listening. I will see you in the next episode of Dismantling Diet Culture Fuck Being Calladita. Nos vemos.
Nos vemos. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias por acompañarme en Dismantling Diet Culture, Fuck Being Calladita podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Especially be sure to rate and review the podcast if you really like it. If you leave me a review on Apple Podcasts, you become eligible for a free 30-minute coaching session. That's right, así como escuchaste, one free session. Once you leave your review, you can screenshot it and email it to me, and I'll send you a link to sign up. If you didn't like it, don't worry, así está bien. Follow me on social media, on Instagram and TikTok, at Dr. Hortensia Jimenez.